This is the Healthy Living Podcast on OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. OWL Radio broadcasts to homes in San Antonio, the Hill Country, San Antonio Methodist Hospitals, and via online streaming and smartphone access. You can also ask your Alexa device to enable and play OWL Radio. Welcome. I am Martha Attee. This podcast is being recorded on May 18, 2023. The first article is from the Well section of the New York Times. Cortisol gets a bad rap, but it's not so clear-cut. The truth about the internet's favorite stress hormone. Maybe you can't sleep. Or you sleep too much. Maybe you keep breaking out or getting sick. Perhaps your stomach bloats, your skin sags, you feel shaky. Maybe you can't focus, eat, or get rid of the tension in your spine. If you've scrolled through TikTok lately, you might be inclined to blame one or all of these things on your cortisol levels. Over the last year or so, users have flooded the app with stories about how their supposed cortisol imbalances have led to a range of health concerns and have recommended that viewers look into their own cortisol levels. Cortisol, sometimes known as the stress hormone, is a chemical that helps regulate the way our bodies react to stress. Martin Picard, an associate professor of behavioral medicine at Columbia University, says it's a hormone that connects the mind and the body together. Nearly every organ has a receptor that responds to cortisol. It is crucial in helping us function throughout the day, whether by regulating our blood pressure or combating inflammation. That doesn't necessarily mean that cortisol imbalances are responsible for the various ailments that people are sharing on TikTok, said Nia Fogelman, an associate research scientist at the Yale Stress Center. She said, "I think it's completely natural and understandable why people want to, A, figure out what's going on with their bodies, and B, to want some one thing that we can fix. But it's not that simple." What does cortisol do? When we experience stress, the pea-sized pituitary gland in the brain, sometimes called the master gland, signals to the adrenal glands that are perched atop the kidneys, prompting them to secrete and deliver cortisol into our bloodstream. Our bodies release the chemical when they are faced with a challenge, whether psychological or physical, real or imagined, said Jeanette M. Bennett, a health psychologist who studies the effects of stress on health at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. We release cortisol when we encounter a tangible threat, like coming across a bear on a hike, but also when we receive an ominous work email. The more threatened we perceive an event to be, the more cortisol we typically produce. Researchers frequently use public speaking as a tool for studying cortisol levels, since any situation in which we're being socially evaluated tends to produce a quick spike of cortisol. Dr. Picard said, "The mind and the body will respond as if we were in danger of dying, when actually what's happening is our sense of self is being threatened." This is a gift from evolution. Cortisol helps us mobilize the energy we need to confront or flee from danger, partly by raising the amount of glucose in our blood. It also regulates our metabolism. Our levels fluctuate throughout the day, rising when we first get up and falling as we drift off to sleep, said Dr. Gregory Friccione, the Associate Chief of Psychiatry at Mass General Hospital and Professor of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He said, "Cortisol is your friend until there's too much of it." What happens when you have high cortisol? We function best when we have the right balance of cortisol. Our bodies are this harmonic unit, Dr. Fogelman said, but chronic stress can elevate our baseline cortisol levels over time, leading to a cascade of consequences. Persistently high cortisol levels may weaken the immune system, as well as raise blood sugar levels and blood pressure. There's also an integral link between cortisol and sleep. We need the hormone level to decrease so we can fully rest. People with high cortisol often struggle to fall and stay asleep. Imbalances can also cause fatigue and irritability. That is what is hard with cortisol, said Dr. Bennett, because it's such an inherently important hormone to just daily function. Outside of stress, any time that daily rhythm is thrown off, that's going to create behavioral problems. Some mental health conditions, including depression and post-traumatic stress disorder, are associated with cortisol imbalances, said Dr. Raza Sagarwala, a resident physician in the Department of Psychiatry at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, who has studied the effects of non-pharmacological treatments on cortisol levels. In rare cases, people who develop excessive amounts of cortisol can exhibit a cluster of symptoms known as Cushing's syndrome. Those with Cushing's syndrome may develop a hump of fat on the back of their necks. Some people gain weight, feel fatigue, and have trouble sleeping. Some bruise easily, and their blood sugars and blood pressure levels may also rise. People with a condition may require medication or surgery, but first they need to be diagnosed by a doctor, said Dr. Pritaba Rao, the medical director of the Adrenal Center at the Cleveland Clinic. Without testing cortisol levels and consulting a physician, it's almost impossible to determine whether something like acne or poor sleep is definitely linked to hormone imbalances, and cortisol may just be a convenient culprit that people can point to when they don't have any other clear explanations for their health concerns. Dr. Bennett said, "When people say they have elevated cortisol, I would tell you, you cannot feel that." But if people are truly worried about their cortisol levels, they can talk to their primary care doctor and about getting tested. Can you measure your cortisol? You can use blood or saliva to test your cortisol levels at a particular moment, but a one-time snapshot isn't likely to be particularly useful. And that is because cortisol levels change throughout the day. Urine or hair samples can reveal cortisol levels over a long period of time, although hair samples are primarily used in research settings. Some companies offer at-home cortisol tests, which typically involve finger sticks or saliva swabs. But experts instead recommend talking to a primary care doctor, who may refer you to an endocrinologist. Dr. Rao says, "I'm not one for all this home kit testing. My advice is don't test in that way." One reason for the caution is that physicians try to obtain a comprehensive picture of how your cortisol levels ebb and flow before determining whether there may be any issues. It's not hard to test cortisol levels, but it's not easy to interpret. Can you lower your cortisol levels? Some small studies have suggested that yoga and mindfulness interventions like meditation may help lower cortisol levels. Dr. Sagarwala added that even the setting aside of 5 minutes a day to relax and reset the mind might be beneficial. He recommended the five senses exercise, which can ground you in a moment of stress. List five things you can see, four things you can touch, three things you can hear, two things you can smell, and one thing you can taste. Exercise can also be helpful for regulating cortisol. Especially moderate physical activity like jogging or cycling. Those movements prompt your body to mirror your stress response, raising your heart rate and then lowering it once you stop working out. That cycle effectively trains our bodies to activate and shut down our stress response appropriately. People should identify the stress reduction methods that work best for them, said Dr. Fogelman. A few minutes of box breathing, for example, might soothe one person but not another. The U.S. Navy SEALs use box breathing technique to prepare for trainings and even before combat because it can enhance cognitive focus. To do box breathing, breathe in for a count of four. Hold your breath for a count of four. Exhale for a count of four. And then hold your breath again for a count of four. This works by making the inhalations, breath holds, and exhales equal, and that forces your breathing into a steady rhythm. It keeps you alert and energized rather than lulling you into a complete relaxed state. Once you find a strategy for alleviating stress, your cortisol levels can potentially become more stable. This is true even for people who have been exposed to intense, long-term stress. Dr. Frischione said, "Stress is not a bad word. Just being a living organism means there's going to be stress." This article appeared in the March 28th New York Times, written by Danny Blum from the Well blog. And you're listening to the Healthy Living Podcast on Al Radio. The next article is also from the New York Times, and it is titled, "The Link Between Highly Processed Foods and Brain Health." Eating packaged foods like cereal and frozen meals has been associated with anxiety, depression, and cognitive decline. Scientists are still piecing together why. This article was printed May 4th, and it is written by Sally Warika. Roughly 60% of the calories in the average American diet come from highly processed foods. We've known for decades that eating such packaged products, like some breakfast cereals, snack bars, frozen meals, and virtually all packaged sweets, among other things, is linked to unwelcome health outcomes like an increased risk of diabetes, obesity, and even cancer. But more recent studies point to another major downside to these often delicious and always convenient foods. They appear to have a significant impact on our minds, too. Research from the past 10 or so years has shown that the more ultra-processed foods a person eats, the higher the chances that they feel depressed and anxious. A few studies have suggested a link between eating unprocessed foods, UPFs, and increased risk of cognitive decline. What's so insidious about these foods, and how can you avoid the mental fallout? Scientists are still working on answers, but here's what we know so far. What qualifies as an ultra-processed food? In 2009, Brazilian researchers put food on a four-part scale from unprocessed and minimally processed, like fruits, vegetables, rice, and flour, to processed, oils, butter, sugar, dairy products, some canned foods, and smoked meats and fish, and ultra-processed. Ultra-processed foods include ingredients that are rarely used in homemade recipes, such as high fructose corn syrup, hydrogenated oils, protein isolates, and chemical additives. Like colors, artificial flavors, sweeteners, emulsifiers, and preservatives, said Eurydice Martinez-Steele, a researcher in food processing at the University of Sao Paulo. This classification system is now widely used by nutrition researchers. Unprocessed foods make up a majority of the packaged foods you'll find in the frozen food aisles at grocery stores and on the menu at fast food restaurants. 70% of the packaged foods sold in the United States are considered ultra-processed. They are increasingly edging out healthier foods in people's diets and are widely consumed across socioeconomic groups. Dr. Eric M. Hecht, an epidemiologist at Schmidt College of Medicine at Florida Atlantic University, says, "Ultra-processed foods are carefully formulated to be so palatable and satisfying that they are almost addictive. The problem is that in order to make the products taste better and better, manufacturers make them less and less like real food." What effect do ultra-processed food have on mental health? Recent research has demonstrated a link between highly processed foods and low mood. In one 2022 study of over 10,000 adults in the United States, the more UPFs participants ate, the more likely they were to report mild depression or feelings of anxiety. New research has also found a connection between UPF consumption and cognitive decline. A 2022 study that followed nearly 11,000 Brazilian adults over 10 years found a correlation between eating ultra-processed foods and worse cognitive function, such as the ability to learn, remember, reason, and solve problems. Quote, "While we have a natural decline in these abilities with age, we saw this decline accelerated by 28% in people who consume more than 20% of their calories from UPFs. It's possible that eating a healthy diet may offset the detrimental effects of eating ultra-processed foods. The Brazilian researchers found that following a healthy eating regimen, like the MIND diet, which is rich in whole grains, green leafy vegetables, legumes, nuts, berries, fish, chicken, and olive oil, greatly reduced the dementia risk associated with consuming ultra-processed foods. Those who found the MIND diet, and that is spelled M-I-N-D, still ate unprocessed foods, had no association between UPF consumption and cognitive decline. Why might ultra-processed foods have this effect? It's unclear. Quote, many high-quality randomized studies have shown the beneficial effect of a nutrient-dense diet on depression, but we still do not fully understand the role of food processing on mental health, said Melissa Lane, a researcher at the Food and Mood Center at Deakin University in Australia. However, there are some clues. Much of the research has focused on how poor gut health might affect the brain. Diets that are high in ultra-processed foods are typically low in fiber, which is mostly found in plant-based foods like whole grains, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds. Fiber helps feed the good bacteria in the gut. Fiber is also necessary for the production of short-chain fatty acids, the substances produced when it breaks down in the digestive system and which play an important role in brain function, said Wolfgang Marx, the president of the International Society for Nutritional Psychiatry Research and a senior fellow at Deakin University in Australia. He says, we know that people with depression and other mental disorders have a less diverse composition of gut bacteria and fewer short-chain fatty acids. Chemical additives in UPFs might also have an impact on gut flora. Emerging evidence, mostly from animal studies, but also from human data, suggests like isolated nutrients like fructose, additives such as artificial sweeteners like aspartame and saccharin, or emulsifiers like carboxymethylcellulose and polysorbate 80, can negatively influence the gut microbiome. Poor microbiota diversity, as well as a diet high in sugar, may contribute to chronic inflammation, which has been linked to a host of mental and physical issues, Dr. Lane said. Interactions between increased inflammation and the brain are thought to drive the development of depression, she said. It's also worth considering the possibility that the link between highly processed foods and mental health works in both directions. Diet does influence mood, but the reverse is also true, said Dr. Frank Hugh, a professor of nutrition and epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. He continues, when you get stressed, anxious, or depressed, you tend to eat more unhealthy foods, in particularly ultra-processed foods that are high in sugar, fat, and chemical additives. The best way to identify ultra-processed foods is to read product labels. A long list of ingredients, and especially one that includes ingredients you would never use in home cooking, are clues that food is ultra-processed, says Whitney Linsenmeyer, an assistant professor of nutrition at St. Louis University in Missouri. chemical names, unpronounceable words, and anything you would be unlikely to find in a kitchen cabinet are often signs that a food is in the ultra-processed category. You can still use convenience foods to make cooking easier without resorting to ultra-processed foods. Products such as canned beans, frozen vegetables, pre-cooked brown rice, or canned fish are all shortcut ingredients that fit well within the scope of a healthy diet, provided that there aren't any industrial items on the ingredient list. Dr. Linsenmeyer says, quote, "If the added ingredients are ones you would use yourself, such as herbs, spices, salt, or cooking oils, then that's an indication that the food, while processed, is not inherently bad for you." I just went back and found the breathing article that was also in the New York Times, and here are other breathing exercises. 4-4-8 breathing. This exercise, if you're feeling anxious or scared. Take a breath in on 4 counts, hold your breath for 4 counts, and then exhale for 8 counts, and keep repeating. Studies have found that purposefully extending your exhale to last a little longer than your inhale, which is what this exercise is aiming to do, can quickly slow your heart rate and bring your blood pressure down. Alternate nose breathing. This exercise is borrowed from yoga. Close your right nostril and breathe through your left nostril for a count of 4. Now close your left nostril and breathe out from your right nostril for a count of 4. Ancient Hindu teachings said that each nostril was responsible for different functions of the brain and body, and intentionally switching between the left and right nostrils would balance those two systems. Recently, researchers have found some limited evidence to support those teaching. A handful of small studies demonstrating that the right nostril is connected to the sympathetic system, which is our fight or flight mode, while the left nostril is connected to the calmer parasympathetic system. At the very least, consciously switching between the two nostrils helps you tune out racing thoughts and focus on the moment. You have been listening to the Healthy Living Podcast, recorded on May 18, 2023. If you have any questions or comments about the program, please call 210-829-4223. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Martha Etty. Thank you for listening, and goodbye from Owl Radio.